If you all remember to silence your cell phones, we would appreciate that. We have Reverend Michelli from the Presbyterian Church here to give the invocation. If you'd remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, we'd appreciate it. Reverend.
Let us pray.
Almighty God, we come before you aware of your power, your justice, your mercy, and your compassion. You are the source of all wisdom. May that wisdom extend to this group, guide and direct each voice, so the work of those gathered here would be a blessing for this community. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend. Thank you for your service to our community. We appreciate it. Brandon, any changes to the agenda?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll look for a motion to approve.
Second. So moved.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I have no reports today. Mr. City Manager.
All right. Yes, Mr. Mayor. I have no report. I've got a couple of items there for the update on the Orange Avenue speed and traffic study that was done by the state. Troy's going to present that.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Good afternoon, Troy.
In your packet, I wrote up just a summary of the process and the progress to date.
Yeah, I'm not sure your mic is on, Troy. Is the mic on?
Hello, testing.
And so the progress to date is we've taken a look at recent crashes. The DOT has undertaken a study to look at some speeds and crashes and, you know, the factors that were resulting from those crashes. And so they are in a study period. They have some draft information, but they haven't finalized their report. And so, you know, I wrote to you and gave you the data to date that we have, and I presented some of the considerations that the DOT is thinking about. As far as any decisions to be made, I don't think that we should make any decisions until the DOT's report is finalized.
Okay. Do we have any questions for Troy?
I have a question because I understand why you're looking at this particular intersection.
Yes.
But I would like to understand from the chief how this intersection compares with other intersections along the state roads and the major corridors. I mean, I understand issue that this one.
You're talking about a specific intersection, but this is really for the whole corridor there.
Well,
from
they were primarily talking about the intersection where the crash took place.
Yeah, south of the Big Bank building.
And what I'm curious about is this area really a far more significant crash area than our other intersections on major roads? And
well, so when we looked at the other main intersections and state roads, to answer your question, as far as the numbers going the last 2 years, no, it's not really comparable. I think we had 11 compared to Orange Avenue, South Orlando 53, then you had South Orlando, Fairbanks 46, Orlando at Lee Road 82, Fairbanks in South Pennsylvania 27, San Aloma, North Lakemont 70. So those, of course, are, and this covers about 250 feet on either side of the intersection.
So it's right in the middle, as you're saying?
No.
How many did you say? I thought
11.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said
15. No, 11 for that particular location. So that kind of gives you, that was your question, how it compares to other intersections.
And most of those others are signalized intersections, so you get a lot of rear-end type crashes.
And the severity is still lower on the low side. The number you said is 11. Is the severity of the Randy just mentioned rear ends at
yeah, I think we're very fortunate not to have a lot of fatalities, a lot of serious crashes, speed related crashes. Most of our crashes are going to be distracted driving, rear end collisions, and things like that. So I don't have the breakdown of of that with me right now, but I would tell you that, yeah, the majority of our crashes are not severe crashes.
Yeah, we'll wait to hear back from FDOT.
One of the things that was in the paper that I just wanted to clarify, they said the average speed along there was 41 miles an hour. It was the 85th percentile speed that was 41 miles per hour, which means 85% of the cars are doing 41 or less.
Right.
And so that's not the average.
Yeah, the average would be less.
Yeah.
Right. But, do they have reporters at the Atlanta Zone?
Well, one item, too, that the DOT wanted to get a thought from the city commission was, I mentioned in the new term I mentioned in my write-up was the de-widening.
Right.
De-widening. And
light size.
Yes.
Right.
Or road diet.
Right.
So the DOT wanted to understand if we even wanted to go there or not. And if we didn't have any appetite for that, then that wasn't going to be part of their recommendations. So just to summarize, there's 14,000 cars a day on that stretch of road. For a four-lane road, it's definitely under capacity. I mean,
We have more cars on the three-lane Lakemont section than we do on the four-lane Arm section.
That's correct. Yeah. So, I mean, the Lakemont, you know, the section where it's maxed out is about 20,000 cars a day. But, you know, what we're doing on Denning is 8,000 to 9,000 cars a day.
So. Okay. So let's at least I've got no right now. I've got no interest in a de-widening. Okay. Anybody else?
No, I don't. Absolutely don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I would suggest that they, in like a three-lane section, just be included as, is that even a feasible alternate or not? That, okay. And is one of their safety, will it improve safety if they do a three-lane, you know, yes or no?
Okay.
Are we going to vote on that?
I think we heard more than three say no.
Are we really concerned about safety with 11 accidents? I mean, nobody wants any, but that's not...
Yeah.
As opposed to
well, yeah.
Well, you guys, if I could give you some context on this road.
Please, you have the floor, sir.
The road itself is a residential street for the most part with houses on both sides. The streets we talked about are commercial streets with businesses and driveways on every corner. So you're talking about safety in a pedestrian zone versus safety in a commercial zone. Well, so there's a different context.
But you've also thrown pedestrians in there, too, to be quite fair, and I'm not sure there's a lot of pedestrian traffic along that area.
Right, but the point being it's more of a residential street than a commercial city street. So that's my point. Is there things for a residential street that we should be doing to the street different than you would do to a commercial street?
Okay. Commissioner Cooper.
Greg, I really do appreciate what you're saying, and if I wasn't trying to project into the future, I might jump right on board. But given the development that we know is potentially coming to that area, I'm not ready to downsize that road.
Okay. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Randy, next.
Yes, sir. I'm going to ask Clarissa to come up and introduce this next item.
Why don't we bump this to the back of the agenda? I'm just kidding. See the ladies in their pink shirts. Let's get to it.
Mayor and Commission, as you know, we have a series of video series that Edson Pacheco, who's our freelance cinematographer, he captures our city in a very unique lens that presents the city in such a beautiful light that it already is. But this episode, which is our sixth episode of Inside the City, was focused primarily on our senior programming. And Kathleen, if you would come join me. Kathleen Doss is our family services manager over at the Parks and Recreation Department. And she has a few special guests. So after we introduce our guests, then we'll watch the video about their programs.
Great.
Be careful, they're a senior gang.
I know.
Okay, so I wanted to introduce some of the seniors that you're going to see in the video coming up that had a great part to do with this. And if you guys will stand as I call your names, we have Miss Barbara, Miss Daisy, Miss Nan, Miss Suzanne, Miss Gigi, Miss Hazel, Miss Amanda, Miss Lucille, Miss Linda, Miss Perry, and of course, Miss Deborah, who's our senior program coordinator. So, hope you guys enjoy it.
Hi, center for the past 4 years, and it's kind of like a senior kindergarten. I feel like I play here. It's a wonderful way to start the day. We have a wonderful senior program, and if you live in Winter Park, it's absolutely free. And I just started belly dancing, and it's tons of fun. We giggle a lot in there. We've had tons of workshops, too. I just finished a workshop on chronic disease. And what's really neat is it gets everybody, different seniors from different groups in the community, mixing. A healthy city has opportunities for people to mix, for citizens to mix. And that's what the senior program does for Winter Park. Community Center, and we only had about two or three programs for a handful of seniors. Now we have hundreds of seniors coming from all over the city participating in our programs, and it's really rewarding for me to have what's like an extra 100 set of parents, or grandparents even, and it just to see them all get along, people who may have never met each other, to be interacting together, participating in activities, calling each other on the weekends even, and going out now that they've become their own separate community within a community. The seniors here at the Community Center have become so involved with not only each other and the community, but they're helping with our youth. And I think that one of the best ways to look forward in our future is to also look at the past and to have those kind of mentors here for our children, and it's just been a great intergenerational combination. You know, Zumba to Tai Chi to going out and doing things. I wanted to make our senior program kind of stand out from others. So basically, driving force and definitely partnerships and everything that we've acquired over the years have definitely brought that forward. The organization in general, with Ms. Deborah's help, has been phenomenal. Obviously, our seniors are our voice and speak for our city. A lot of them have been here their whole lives, and it shows. And they definitely, the stories that we hear and, you know, the comfort that it brings just with the city of knowing, like, where it started and where it is now. Then they have a live a healthy lifestyle. We have Tai Chi, we do Jungle Yoga, Welcome to the Oldies, we have arts and craft classes, nutritional classes, whatever the needs are for the seniors. Winter Park Community Center is a place where everyone can come for our seniors from all walks of life. Describe this place in one word, it would be fantastic. Gratifying.
A joy and a blessing to many seniors, especially people who live alone.
If I were to describe this place using one word, I would use the word family.
As you can see, these Inside Winter Park series are those glimpses into the treasures that we have here. If you're not participating in one of those programs, you might not know about it. So thank you to our seniors who are not expired, but retired, because we truly want to aspire to be like all of you. So thank you.
Great, thank you. Brandon.
That concludes my report.
Mr. Wilson.
I have one quick comment. I just want the seniors to know that, that they have some representation up here on, on the dais.
Great. Any questions for the city manager? Brady, I just have a quick one. I got a call the other day about the lights that are going in on Denning. Are those different than the lights that we have going in on the other roads that we're doing?
No. I mean, they're not, for the most part, they're not different. They may be, they're LED, so that's the difference in them. But we try to match the look throughout the city on those.
So is it just the bulb, or is it the, I don't know what the...
They're more like the ones on Morse.
So they're not the Steinberg.
They're not the Steinberg lights?
They're Sternberg.
Sternberg, sorry.
Are they a whiter light or a yellow light? Is that the question?
So the bulb itself is a little whiter.
Yes.
Okay.
Did you? When you're talking about Denning, are you talking about the stretch between Fairbanks and Orange?
I've got to say, I haven't looked yet. I just got a call about 2 minutes before I walked in here and someone mentioned it to me. I figured while I had you, I'd ask the question.
It is a 12-foot tall pole. It's our Sternberg pole. The fixture is a different style fixture, but it's a new LED white light fixture that we're progressing to. The poles that go in on Denning from Fairbanks northward are going to be the taller 22-foot poles that, like you see already on Denning in front of the Paseo and the CNL building.
Okay.
And so the reason for that is we're keeping those lights on the west side. Okay. We're keeping that same look, and it because they're taller and they're designed to light the whole road. Yeah, so we won't have lights directly next to houses that are shining in people's windows.
Okay.
And so that I just wanted to clarify when you talk about lights on Denning. The lights
there's
going
different
forward,
lights.
Yeah, the lights going forward will be the taller poles. They'll be on the west side of the road. They will be an LED light as well.
Okay, I'm going to go. I just want to take a peek in. I was not aware of it, so I want to go take a peek myself. Did you want to say something, Commissioner?
I was just curious about why you decided to do north one kind of light and south a different kind of light.
This is how Troy gets skinny. He just keeps walking back and forth.
I don't even feel like I'm talking to the same guy.
Well, when we were looking at what do we got out there to start with, on the south side from Orange to Fairbanks, we really didn't have any decorative lights. We had some around the Lake Midget Park, and we also looked at where are the houses. You know, we're cognizant of putting a fixture 10 or 20 feet away from a house.
Right.
And so if we were to, you know, put fixtures on the west side of the road at all, they would be real close to the houses because there's not a lot of right-of-way. So we went with more of a residential scale light, and we put it on the east side of the road, so it's farthest away from the houses. When we looked at the north section, north of Fairbanks, you know, we already have those nice 22-foot tall, I forget the term, but where you've got an arm, a pendant light hanging off of an arm. We've already got probably 10 or 12 of those already on the west side. And so it made sense, instead of trying to, you know, either redo those or jumble things up, we went with those lights. Those lights actually provide a better consistency of light. So you don't, because they're taller, they do a better job of spreading light, and always, you know, in the lighting business, you know, if you can go taller, taller is where you want to be. And so we're doing, you know, keeping that same look through that whole corridor, plus we're keeping the lights, again, away from people's windows.
So there's actually a larger gap between the residences going to the north and the actual light fixture, isn't there? Because we're going to put that sidewalk in between and hopefully trees.
Yes, but the lights are going to, the poles are actually going to be on the other side of the road from the houses. And the way those are designed, they will do a good job of lighting all the way to the west.
So are we not going to light our multi-purpose trail on the east side?
Yeah, it'll be lit.
Okay.
Those lights on the west side are designed to light that whole road. Yeah.
Thank you.
Didn't go and notice that. A guy that's 6'5" said, when you get taller, you get better.
I heard him say that, too, yeah. And I was wondering if that was a plug.
Yeah. I agree with the person.
Okay. Any other questions for the city manager? All right. Mr. Ardman, you're up, sir.
Yes, sir. Briefly, Mayor, Commissioners, your efforts have been very productive at the legislative level. The CRA legislation that was passed by the House did not get a final companion bill in the Senate Friday. I don't know how many of you all actually sent your emails, but a lot of folks on this commission and some other commissions did.
Well, I know and our letter, residents, by the way.
And the residents, the effort was successful. It died. The Senate did not pass on its third reading either the CRA or the CDD language.
So or the amendment that they were trying to...
That's correct. Right. So it's dead, of course, but it's going to be coming back next year. So
nothing's dead in Tallahassee.
Just keep it rolling.
Except for logic.
A lot of the efforts, as you all have been very proactive, have that were to preempt the trees, the...
Vacation
rentals done. Actually, a whole list of them. So your efforts and our citizens' efforts... across Central Florida, the municipal elections issue dead, impact fees dead, CRA's dead, red light cameras dead, tree trimming dead, vacation rentals dead, and
so we still have a local government.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait till next year.
So we did pass some gun control measures too, though. But that's a lot.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Kirk, but didn't the Senate actually was responsible for the majority of those being voted down or not
heard.
Right. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, they all passed this House.
That's good to know.
That's where they started where they ended.
Any other questions for the city attorney? No? Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll take citizen comments in about an hour or so. Consent agenda.
Yep, I need to pull for me the 9C. I need to recuse myself.
You're going
to
recuse yourself on 9C?
Yep.
Okay.
That's Tetra Tech, right?
It is.
I have a question on 9B.
Okay, so we'll pull both. Are we okay?
I'll move the rest.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. We'll open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on item 9A? Now is your time. Okay, seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. That was 5-0, Cindy. Mr. Seidel, you pulled 9C. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's take a vote on 9C then. I need a motion to approve 9C.
So moved.
Second. Great. We'll open the floor to the public on item 9C as well. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to the public. In favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Cindy, that was 4-0. Ms. Cooper, 9B.
It's a question for Troy and for staff. Maybe. Is the Four Seasons now on board? Has that communication been going well? I know a few years back they were very concerned about a wall, and I don't know if we're building a wall or if we've worked through that with them, where we are on that.
We are progressing, and it's looking positive that we will be able to do the trail over the ditch, over the portion of the ditch that's on the Four Seasons property.
There are still some people who are not in favor of it, but the majority that we've heard from has been pretty positive.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're going to get this huge backlash that saying we haven't talked to the community. We have talked to the Four Seasons and have at least consensus, if not
yes
approval.
Yeah.
And that ditch is not a lake. It's not free-flowing water. That's what someone from the Four Seasons told me.
Well, it's free-flowing, but it's still a ditch.
Yeah. It's a free-flowing ditch.
It's a free-flowing ditch.
Yeah.
Where does it's not a lake.
Where does it end up?
It flows into the Interlochen Country Club and then east and then back south and goes into the
Lecon River. But it goes under a loma?
Yes.
So you said, let me be clear, it's a drainage ditch. Is that
correct.
It's not
a canal.
And we're not building a wall. Has that discussion now gone away?
That is
we are. They want a wall. We are building a wall.
But the final design has not been. The final design has not been agreed upon.
That's correct.
Right. So, yeah. We're going to bring back to the commission the easement agreement, the license agreement, that you'll get to see all of those documents, as soon as we have it executed by the Four Seasons Homeowners Association.
Right. This is just the conveyance of the easement.
So you'll,
thank
you will
you
see
very
it.
Much. That's what I was
It spells about. Out all those details.
This is just the conveyance
just
of the easement.
There's a lot of language posturing going on here.
Sure.
And when answers aren't crisp and direct, it makes me uncomfortable.
Their board hasn't voted yet. But we've got an indication from the board that they're in favor of it.
Okay. So, again, this is just the conveyance of the easement. We've been taking care of this property since 2004, if I remember right. Is that about right? Okay, great. So we'll look for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All right. We will open up the floor to public comment. We'll close the floor to public comment. Oh, yes, ma'am. Did you have a comment, if you would mind coming to the microphone?
Good evening. My name is Hazel Walker, and I live in Winter Park, and I do a lot of traveling back and forth of Denon and, what's the name of the street? Denon and Fairbanks Avenue.
Okay.
And the other day I got a ticket in the mail saying I ran the red light. I checked into it. My daughter checked into it for me. I wonder how I got a ticket because...
So, Ms. Walker, can I interrupt you for a moment?
Excuse me.
We're here to just speak on this item right now.
No. I'm talking about the traffic light.
No, this is about the St. Andrews Trail that we're talking
okay,
about now.
No,
but that's okay. So, but what we can do is have somebody get with you afterwards to discuss your specific issue. Okay? Thank you. Randy, would you make sure somebody connects with Ms. Walker? Thank you. Anybody else? Nope. We'll close the floor to public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. That was 5-0, Cindy. Action items, number 10A. Randy.
Yes, the second meeting in May falls on Memorial Day. In the past, the commission sometimes have canceled that meeting entirely, sometimes have moved it to Tuesday of the week, and we just want to know the pleasure of the commission. It's too early to say how busy it will be. We do have a lot of development-type projects coming forward. Some of them will be here next meeting and some in April. Don't know about May yet.
Okay. So will the commission, anyone?
Cancel.
I just assume cancel it. Unless the city manager comes back to us in April and says, hey, guys, you might want to reconsider
okay.
that decision. I would.
So what's the notice situation, Randy, if we do decide to have a meeting, if we do decide to recall them?
We'll just post it on the board outside and on the website that there's no meeting, you know, where
okay.
we normally put the agenda.
So, Mr. Weldon, would that be a motion to cancel?
Yes.
And Ms. Cooper, would you take that second?
I would be happy to.
Excellent. Thank you. Let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. Okay. Seeing none,
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted a point of clarity so then we could
let
add
me just
back.
Close the floor to public comment. Okay. Mr. Seidel, your turn, sir.
If we could add it back if
yeah.
Randy's
sure.
Okay.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Sure. Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilder?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes, thank you. Okay, Mr. City Manager, I believe the next is yours. Tennis Center?
Yes, Tennis Center, Michelle, or you or Jason. Jason's going to present this item. I knew you had that jacket on for some reason.
I know, he's looking too sharp.
Like an adult. Don't go that far.
One step at a time. Yeah. All right. Good evening, Mayor, Commissioners. I came to you guys back in, I believe it was January, about the tennis center, that this was something that was coming down the road, and that we were going to be looking at the business model that we're currently using, and then also some housekeeping as far as renovations and some maintenance that was needed at the facility. Part of that was to go back to public input, and so we used the month of January and the first part of February to gather that public input. So we are here now because one of the things that did come out of the public input was that folks wanted to see this moved up the timeline. They wanted to see us make a decision and move on it earlier rather than later. So that's why we're here in March rather than closer to April. So with that being said, we'll get going. Was this the trick? There we go. All right, so just a little bit about our current operation model. Right now, High Performance Sports Management, they're a private group that operates the Winter Park Tennis Center. They've been there for 8 years as the operator. They currently average roughly a gross revenue of about $520,000 per year, with the city receiving 10% of that of those gross revenues. They manage all aspects of operation, which includes maintenance, business operation, and instruction. The city assists with a few different maintenance aspects and then capital improvements as well. Next slide kind of shows the past 8 years, over the 8 years, the performance of the tennis center. First column shows you the revenues. The next, the operational expenses taken on by the city each year. Our periodic capital improvement expenses, and then total expenses. And then those last two columns, you can see kind of how the performance went when you take an overall approach versus an operational approach. And you'll see that four out of the 8 years, we were in the black, four in the red overall, and then three out of eight in the red, and then five out of eight we were in the black, with an average of right around $25,000 to $30,000 a year in revenues.
Now, to clarify that schedule for everyone, the revenues is our percentage of the current revenue generated under the private contract.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. So.
So this is all city expenses and revenues as.
So is that 10%? Is that what we're
you guys make it larger?
Yes, it is 10%.
Yeah, so basically their gross for revenue would be times, you multiply that out, that's what their gross is. There we go.
So that represents approximately 10% of the overall revenue from the tennis operation.
That's accurate.
Operation.
Can we move on? We're good? Okay.
You may have to shrink it down again before you can advance it.
Can you shrink it down for me, please? There we go. All right, public input process. We did public input meetings throughout January and February. We had a total of four meetings. We saw about 100 people face-to-face throughout those four meetings. The next thing we did is we took some of that information that we gleaned from having those public meetings and put together a survey that went out to our membership. There was 146 families with 74 responding. And then in addition to that, myself and Ronnie Moore made ourselves available for one-on-one and group meetings with any of our tennis groups, interested parties, anyone that wanted to come and speak to us personally about tennis. We made ourselves available for that. And we probably had a good dozen folks that came in and met with us about tennis. Some public feedback. So from the public feedback sessions, the biggest challenges we came across were communication. Communication could be improved. Soft court maintenance was the next biggest thing. And then customer service was one of those that there was a strong push that it was great and everything was fine. But then we also saw a lot of people that had a strong feeling in the other direction. So it kind of left us feeling like there's maybe two different expectations of service there, and that consistency-wise, we're not really there yet. So that was the operational challenges. On the positive side, everyone seemed to be very happy with instruction and instructors, high-performance sports management. The level of tennis instruction programming, according to their parents, seems to be great. Everyone's very happy. And the other thing that everyone seemed to be very happy about was the fees and costs. They felt that fees and costs were in line with expectations. So there was no real, those were the two biggest positives. And like I said, the instructors were one that we heard from everybody that everybody was happy with instructors. Member survey, the biggest things that came out of member survey was really just reconfirmed some of our information we received through the public input meetings, and then also through just comments that we've received over the past few years. Soft court maintenance. Our clay court maintenance has always been, it continues to be an issue. Communication was another one that's an issue. Members felt that there should be a newsletter that they should be receiving, more updates, member meetings, those sorts of things. The last thing on there from the survey is that programming instruction came back very highly rated. I think they were somewhere around 78 to 80% positive on that. So, like I said, the program instruction, everyone's happy. Communication, soft court maintenance are the two biggest things that we probably need to look at. So, after going through the public input, after the survey, and then after looking at some of our historic customer feedback on the facility over the past few years, the Parks and Recreation Department has come up with our proposed operation model. And what we'd like to do is go away from the current model where it's 100% basically ran by an outside party and look at bringing that scope in a little bit and modifying that scope so that we allow the tennis folks who are professionals and experts in teaching tennis and instructing tennis, we let them do what they're good at. And we go ahead as the city and we take on the maintenance and the business operations on our end of it. And that way we know the maintenance is going to be where it needs to be. And we know that from a business operations standpoint, the facility is running how we'd like it to run. And I think we can make good examples of this. It's very similar with the golf course and then also with Showalter Stadium, where Showalter Stadium was something that we contracted it out. We've brought it in-house to the end user. Nothing's really changed. The high school football games still take place. You know, your track meets still take place, but the city's just more involved. So similar thought process is going on here. Division of duties, City of Winter Park, we would schedule the courts, handle member and guest relations, maintenance of all aspects of the facility, collection of all fees, and management of check-in and pro shop. We'd also be looking at rebranding the tennis center logo and merchandise so that we can have a consistent look between the golf course and the rest of our facilities. We'd be looking at our side of it, the oversight of programming instruction, an instructional contractor, and then we'd also continue to take care of capital improvements. On the other side of it, the contracted tennis programming provider, we'd simply looking be doing promotion and implementation of tennis programming. That's your private lessons, your group lessons, management of USTA tournaments, competition level junior training programs, rackets, training, anything that falls under that professional tennis niche would fall under them. Fiscal impact. Okay, so what we're looking at with this is we see an overall budget increase of about $575,000, which sounds like an astronomical number. But we need to realize that with us taking in that business operations that we're going to become a pass-through for the cash, and that means we'll be paying the contractor rather than vice versa. So that's where you're going to see that number. But please keep in mind that $575 is completely tied to revenue. So obviously if the tennis center didn't perform, the program or the programming instruction didn't perform at a certain level, that would be our revenues would shrink, but as well our expenses would shrink with that. Some of them, obviously. Some are going to be hard costs that aren't tied to that, but obviously a big chunk of this is going to be tied to that revenue line.
Commissioner Cooper.
How confident are you in those numbers? And I ask that only because this is all based on a model of sharing with the vendor.
Right.
And I would like to be very comfortable that we are being conservative and taking care of the taxpayers' dollars and making sure it's hard to ever increase our share once you set this baseline.
Right.
It's just very hard to do.
Right.
So my question is, are you confident that we have created a sharing that gives you the flexibility you need? Because I don't want to have to go do it again next year. And I haven't seen what the sharing is.
Well, that's the next step, and we're working through that now. We envision as a sharing model that is performance-based, so there's a range. Once you hit this range, we get this percentage. Once you go to the next tier, we get another percentage, and then next tier, this percentage. So there's going to be a performance, a way to drive performance on the contractor. We've been very conservative in our numbers all throughout this. So I am confident that I think the biggest thing on our end is keeping in mind that, you know, this isn't about bringing in lots of new revenue or more revenue. This is about quality, making the place nicer. And yeah, so that's what we're really looking at. But yes, the whole time we've been keeping in mind, you know, being fiscally responsible.
Because I'd like it to be maintained better than
it's been maintained. Great. So here it kind of gives you an idea. You do see an increase in our expenses as well as an increase in the revenues. The bottom line is it's about a $30,000 increase in our revenue is what we should see. I think that's a fair number being conservative overall.
That's
not on top of what you had. That's just all together.
No, that's not. Like right now we're in the neighborhood of about $25,000, right. I think, is what we're averaging. And so I'm saying that we should be coming out around 50-ish, 45 to 50.
Okay.
The next one is linking back into that fiscal impact. This just kind of shows you the staffing scenario we're looking at. Once again, keeping in mind that we want to be sensitive to adding any full-time staff or part-time staff. We're looking at this is a minimal budget, or it's minimal staffing, but it fits the need.
And that fits into your numbers?
Yes, sir.
Adding seven professionals.
Yes, that's your, about
loaded cost, all their overhead, everything.
Yeah, three full-time staff is about $111,000 per year plus benefits, and then the other is makes up about another $70,000, I believe.
And they become City of Winter Park employees?
Yes, ma'am.
What is that percent-wise to your staff, Jason?
Percent-wise?
How are you, you're increasing three full part-time. What's your current staff level?
That's a good question.
It's okay. Can you get back to us on it?
Yeah, I'll get back
Thank
to
you.
On that.
It seems like a big number.
Yeah, the three. I'll give you an idea.
Thank you.
Yep, no problem. And then last but not least, this is kind of just what we expect our positive impacts of this. We feel like by doing this, it's going to put the contractor in a position where they're able to focus on what they're good at. They're tennis professionals. They're tennis instructors. This gets them out of the maintenance and out of the running a business and lets them focus strictly on running top-end tennis programming. Consistent standard of customer service and member experience across city facilities to match the increased level of service at the Winter Park Golf Course. This gets us back to, we want to have a similar product at all of our facilities. I think that's fair to our residents. So this would accomplish that. And then an increased level of focus of detail on the maintenance of the facility. By having somebody there, city staff there constantly overseeing it, we're going to get rid of these gray areas of whether it's the contractors or whether it's the city's responsibility. It's going to reduce the frustration for the end user. So at the end of the day, we're going to have happier customers and we're going to have a nicer facility. So those are kind of what we see as the positives of this going in this direction.
Okay.
Questions?
Questions? Greg?
I just make a comment. I mean, I can't think of anything that we're running as a city that we're not running well. And is there anything that pops up that we're not running well? It seems we run this well as well.
Like anything, depends on who we ask.
This will solve the two concerns you had, which were the concern about the maintenance of the soft court and the communication.
Yep, and customer service level. I think it creates consistency. I think you can, like I said, we have some examples internally of recent changes like this. I mean, we did it with the community center 7-8 years ago when we went away from the Boys and Girls Club. We did it with Showalter Stadium when we changed that arrangement with the high school. So I think it's kind of going in the same way with Katie Wade Pool. We've recently taken that kind of back under our wing, and we still work with the YMCA, and we still work with the schools and those things like it's always happened. It's just kind of it's a continuation in that direction.
Okay. Mr. Whelan.
Yes, I just want to clarify that presuming that this change is approved today, that sets your structure for the contract you're going to pursue. Through an RFQ process or
yes,
an RFP process?
RFQ.
Okay.
We would be looking to get that RFQ out probably within the next 2 weeks, so that way we can move on this quickly and get it buttoned up before we get too far into the summer.
Ms. Cooper.
I would just like to see this come back next year to show us if you were successful or not.
Yes, definitely.
Because if we have to change the business relationship, mm-hmm. we need to be prepared to do that.
Right.
And you're really stepping out there because quality is really important.
Right.
And it hasn't been maintained to the level that people expected. So you've got a big job ahead of you and go for it.
Yes, ma'am.
Jason, I think this is a good first step. I think there's probably some more work we need to do. The golf course went from losing 200 to 250 a year to breaking even. That's a huge swing, and that's a great swing for us. And we have a world-class facility there. This is a bit of a baby step, and I think a little bit of an in-between thing. But I do think maybe we go to Parks and Rec, perhaps in the next couple of months, and ask for a deeper dive into it and to look at our overall tennis offering. The facility is a little bit long in the tooth and needs some major upgrades, but it might be a nice opportunity to look and see exactly what our offering should be for a community of our size. Mr. Weldon did a nice thing not too long ago, probably 6 to 9 months ago, where he compared the offering parks that the City of Winter Park has compared to some of the surrounding areas. And I think we outperform, and we outprovide, I should say. I'm not sure we outperform, but we outprovide. And I think it's probably a good thing to look at, see how much money we're spending on all these services. So, I think it's a nice interim step. So thank you.
I would add to that that, I'm in favor of giving them the chance to try this.
Sure.
I have some questions about the head count, and I think the reality of what comes back with the extent of competitive bidding for the contract and and the revenue share that is available through a competitive process will help clarify whether or not we can truly afford to have that headcount or not. And I would also add that as we do this, I think it's important to understand the number of residents and non-residents using the tennis center.
I agree. That's what I was talking about, a deeper dive moving forward.
Yeah. Well, and this, I think, this baby step is going to actually, I think, provide us the ability to get a better handle on that. Right now, there's not a whole lot of resident, non-resident data available through the contractor, so we aren't really able to get a picture of who's using our facility. I think this interim step, the step here is going to start giving us that ability to figure
that
out.
Yeah, I think we owe it to the residents to do that. So, it's going to be interesting. It'll be a learning process for us.
I will say that I remember when we gave up this right and when we went with someone else, because I was sitting up here when we did that, and we did have a lot of people in our community who came forward supporting that. So it is interesting for me to note that we are going the other way. I appreciate we're going the other way, because whether we contract it out or not, the vast number of people in the public believe that we are responsible.
Sure.
So I think that it's a good point for us to do that and to take it on and to go down that path. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, folks, we have a presentation for us. We have a motion.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Okay, I heard Commissioner Cooper first. Great, let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wish to address the commission on this item? Now's your time. Okay, sir.
I thought she was getting a scoop. Yeah, John Raker, City of Winter Park, 1660 Jolene Road. I did send an email to the commissioners, but for the audience, I've been an active player at Azalea for over 20 years and interfaced with a lot of players down there. Doubles, singles, tournaments, you name it. And I want to commend the Parks and Rec Department for doing a very thorough review of the situation, a whole spectrum of public input, which I think is what it's the key to understanding where we are. And certainly we are a little behind in a couple areas, and I'm impressed that they have an objective to improve the customer experience substantially, and I think this is the way to do it. It'll respond to the players and the public much more quickly and effectively, and I totally endorse what's being proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rieger. Okay, we'll close the floor to public comment. Any other discussion, Commission? Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Welby?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Randy?
Yes, sir. Dan's going to introduce this next item.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor.
Good afternoon, Dan.
What we bring you today is our intention to join into a partnership with other municipalities to get a favorable price to get solar through the FMPA. We've already discussed this with our utility advisory board. They're approved this. The lawyers reviewed it. We've approved it. And I've got Jerry here who helped negotiate it, if I get too deep into the dive, as well as Frank and Jacob from the FMPA joined us today. So with that, I'll go right into the slides. What we're looking at is there's joint site, joint locations, 2 to 3 of them will be made, and really it's leaning towards 3, 75 megawatts apiece. The reason it said 2 to 3 is we weren't sure how many participants we're going to get, but it's really leaning towards 3 as it sits today. And the economy of scales is just that. This is the only opportunity we have to grab solar at this rate, because we're going to use the economy of scales going in with other municipalities, both on the all requirements and not all requirements municipalities, which we are non-all requirements.
Dan, what size, I see this, you say maximum size is, and you're doing it by megawatts. What's the size from a square footage for these sites to be built? Are they 5 acres? 10 acres a megawatt?
So 750 acres per feet.
Thank you.
They're mainly Orange and Osceola County.
Right. And what does a megawatt give us to, and again, I'm just trying to contextualize this a little bit. What does a megawatt, 1 megawatt provide average homes? Is it 100 homes? Is it 2 homes? Is
10,
it?
I got a slide on that. 10 megawatts gives us...
Ballpark?
Jerry, what?
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to jump ahead.
He's calculating.
About 300 homes per megawatt?
Yes, because the solar doesn't shine all the time.
Sure. Okay, just trying to get an idea of it. Thank you.
And we're looking at 10 megawatts, by the way.
Which would be about 7% of our load.
Great. Thank you, guys.
This plant has the single-axis tracking. So, in other words, you have solar, like, I'll just make it easy for people like me. I have solar from my flag of my house, and it just faces one direction. It faces south. They have single-tracking, which means it follows the sun. So we get more use of the sun than we would with a fixed unit.
Okay.
It's NextEra, who is the parent company of FPL, is the one who is the developer of this. And we're looking for it with all this being approved and all the municipalities approving this thing should start operation in 2020. The developer will build, own, and operate the solar plant. That means we don't have any of the upfront costs. They're taking care of all that. Participating cities will get a pro rata share of the plant output. And I'll show you later who the participating cities are. We'll negotiate, we'll execute the contract with FMPA, which will obligate us to purchase the pro rata share of the plant output at a specified price, which I discussed with you in an email prior to this meeting. Mm-hmm. I can't really go into the exact price, but it'll be less than $40 a megawatt hour. The participating utilities will only pay for the output. There won't be any upfront costs. That's what the first bullet basically says. We're not having to build it. We're just getting the benefits from it. It's a 20-year term with 2 optional 5-year extensions. And as I said, the price is less than $40 a megawatt hour, or if it's easier for you, 4 cents a kilowatt hour.
Is that an R option?
Is what the extension?
Yes.
So it's sort of. So what will happen is the municipalities that are in this, that are working on this together, they'll build a committee when this is done, and that will be voted on. It will have to be 100% agreement with the others. So if Winter Park said we want out, then the others would have to agree to take our share and move on. It would work as a committee that would be developed afterward. OUC is a big part of the whole deal. They're taking 120 megawatts of the intended solar output. The all requirement cities, as you can see listed there, they're taking 58 megawatts, and they're asking that us, Alachua, Bartow, Homestead, Lake Worth, and Wachula pick up the 55 to 65 megawatts, and that's what trying to get all this settled up front so they can build this thing in good faith.
So all those other cities have to accept the other 4 of, could you take that back just one slide, please?
The only 3 cities that have not approved are you, Alachua, and Washington.
Okay.
Everyone else has.
Thank you.
And speaking with those cities, I think the intention is to, it's just they haven't done the formal.
And have the others accepted more than the 10?
KUA went the 3rd.
And Bartow's over too.
Bartow's at 13.
Okay. Thank you.
So the KWH is purchased at a fixed energy price for 20 years, plus there's an administrative cost by FMPA, which is about 50 cents, plus an amortization, which is about 2 cents. All of that's figured into the less than $40 megawatt hour. That's not in addition to, that's all figured into the cost. And remember, that's less than $40 a megawatt hour. Again, it includes the 2 optional 5-year extensions, which, as we just discussed, would be voted on at that time, which we'd be part of that vote. We would have a member on that board. The benefits are demand cost savings, because we don't have to pay the demand on what we get from them that we're not getting from the other. from any of our other providers, or suppliers rather. Possible energy savings. The reason I say possible is because we don't know what the costs are going to do moving forward in the market. We have in a minute, I'll show you a base case scenario. There's possible FPL transmission savings that aren't shown. So in other words, we're not paying, when we buy from FPL, we got to pay transmission charges from FPL and from Duke. We wouldn't have to pay those FPL charges on the part that we're buying from solar, obviously.
Okay.
So this slide feeds the next slide, and it's just, here's the key assumptions in the base case. The base case is showing some inflation. Fixed solar price plus the FMP AMN plus the development recovery, as we already said, is less than $40 a megawatt hour. We're expecting a Duke Energy Florida transmission inflation of 4.5%, a Florida Power and Light transmission inflation of 1.5%, and market inflation for the demand charges at 1.5%. This is just what Jerry put together out of a lot of analysis of what's been happening, what we think is going to happen, and the market fuel, inflation of fuel costs as well. He also did a key assumption with a zero inflation, which is unlikely, but hey, it's possible, which feeds this slide. So as you can see, if we just use the base case that we just went over, putting together the cost savings from the demand cost, the energy cost, the demand saved, and the energy saved, we're looking at, it looks like $11.8 million over the life of the contract. So, okay.
With inflation.
With inflation. And in the worst case scenario, which is no inflation, which I guess would be a great scenario in life, but we would lose a little in energy, but nothing that would outweigh what we save in the demand. So we're at the minimum, we'll be looking at a $4.8 million benefit over a 20-year term.
Okay.
The risks, the step-up provision among participating cities says that. So of all those cities, if someone defaults, the remaining participants have to pick up their share. It's a very unlikely situation, but it could happen, so it's a risk. We were concerned that that would mean a monetary risk. Really and truly, if it did happen, it would more mean that we would have to take over their portion of the energy, so we just buy more. And hopefully it's a good deal, and that's not a big deal for us, right?
So explain that, though, a little bit. You're talking about a default. Are you talking about the city defaulting?
Some other city.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, some other city.
Not
default.
The FMPA.
No, I understand that. I mean, if another city defaults, but what does a default look like? Is it a default just on this contract, or are you talking about a total default?
Well, I guess it would be on this contract.
And I would assume that there's penalties for defaulting out of a contract of this significance when you have all these other parties in it.
Sure.
Okay.
It's really unlikely, but you have to list it as a risk because it could happen.
And would you share that with the other cities that were still in it if there was a default?
Right. Yes.
It'd be prorated.
Exactly.
Thank you.
The other risk is technology changes over 20 years and solar prices continue to decline.
That's a big risk, right?
And it is, but not. And when you look at the overall impact of what this is to our total cost, mm-hmm. But it is a risk. We saw that risk with what we have on the compound roof. This is far cheaper than that is. So we see how the technology has improved. It could improve more. The 10 megawatt share amounts to about 6% of our energy supply, and it's less than 3.25% of our overall power supply cost. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's not a risk, but it's in the scheme of things, it's a smaller risk. The benefits. Of course, we want to do our part to have a clean footprint. This helps us with our clean footprint. And at the same time, we're not doing like others do, where we're going to say to our residents, this is going to cost you extra cents on your bill. This is part of our power supply. We get this. So we're going to have renewable energy in our portfolio. More. Don't forget we have Covanta. We got a 20-year price certainty for the portion of the Winter Park power supply. All the scenarios that Jerry put together, he put some far-fetched ones together, that, or this should say, over all scenarios, but he really went out there looking for scenarios where it wouldn't work, and almost every one of them, we get an economic savings. It's like owning your own power plant without having to take the ownership risks. we pay for only the megawatt hours delivered. And the FMPA takes care of all the administration. They administer the bills. We'll be getting those from NextEra. FMPA will be directing those towards us. So I guess in conclusion, the solar project prices are lower than, like I said, the 65 megawatt hour we're paying for the one on top of the clean footprint on top of where I work over at the compound. So we're coming in less than 40, so you've seen improvements. The impact on Winter Park overall cost of power is low. We discussed that. It's 3.25% or less. It would provide a 10 megawatt, which is 6.1% of our energy requirement. So again, we're just adding to our portfolio. Jerry especially, but staff as well, has evaluated all the scenarios and various sizes, inflation, alternative pricing, etc. There's really not a whole lot of downside to it. Based on the risk and the minimum load consideration, we recommend participation in the getting 10 megawatts. And so, asking you to approve the Winter Park participation and approve the solar project power sales agreement between us and the FMPA.
Okay. Dan, I just have a quick question for you before I
sure.
turn over. Additional capacity in the future, and do we have the right of first refusal to it if we like the program we're in before you go out and sell to other people?
Solar farms will be fully subscribed, so there won't be any additional from these farms.
And there's no plan to add farms?
We may have new farms in the future, a phase two effort. Other cities have expressed interest. If that happens, we'll certainly invite you to participate.
Will we have the right to be first in as part of the participatory?
We grant you a right of first refusal because there's so many other cities involved in the same project, but you will certainly be invited.
Okay.
Well, I guess the question.
Would you mind stepping up to the microphone while we just so we can get it all on the record? Thank you. Commissioner Cooper.
Well, my question wasn't just Winter Park, but do the current participating
that was
cities
my question too.
Have the first opportunity of any increased capacity? Slightly different.
Same question,
yeah,
just
exactly.
More detail. That was my
That's
question.
That's what you meant.
That's
it.
My question.
How we're doing this is we're structuring this as three farms, one project, three farms.
Sure.
They'll be fully subscribed. So there's no additional capacity from this specific project. By the way, my name is Frank Gaffney, Chief Operating Officer with FMPA.
I think we understand that. But we're saying if you do build additional capacity in another
if
farm.
If we do a phase two of this effort, Gainesville, Lakeland, and other cities have expressed some interest, what we'll do is we'll do the same effort we did this time, go to our member cities, we have 31 of them, ask, are you interested in participating, try to gather the total interest, and then do the same process we did this time, which was get as much as we can for as much economies of scale as we can to get the lowest price we can, and then work with a vendor to give us to give us that deal. So it wouldn't necessarily be a right of first refusal as much as take as much as you want, because the more you take, the lower the price.
Well, I think as early subscribers to this, as in any kind of deal, we'd like to have consideration to future projects as well. I think is if we're taking the risk with you, we're helping you build this product.
Let me clarify, we're not actually building.
Right.
We're hiring a different vendor,
right.
NextEra.
But our commitment is helping them
okay.
build. That's my
I question. Hear you.
Mr. Weldon.
Yes, excuse me, OUC working through FMPA as well?
We consider OUC sort of our anchor tenant to make this happen. As you can see, yeah. They're taking about half of the total megawatts.
So their deal is the same one on the table today?
It's the same deal, but it's not through FMPA, it's by identical contracts with Four Farm Light, or NextEra.
And then
the same price.
Is there any provision in the contracts, any out at all, for NextEra or your organization to increase the pricing over the 20-year period?
There's no, we negotiated all that away for NextEra, and for us, the only increase might be we administer the contract, so as salaries increase, there'll be a slight increase in the administration costs.
But that cost is de minimis?
That's de minimis.
Yeah.
And it's capped.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Mr. Seidel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Had a couple questions just with regards to the maintenance cost, and I'm assuming I don't know the life cycle of these. Are they 20-year, 30-year? Do we know the life cycle?
They expect a 35-year life. They will have to replace inverters about every 10 years. But all the maintenance costs is built into the overall price you've seen.
Okay. And then are they hardened for the hurricanes? If we have a hurricane
yes,
come
they
through,
are. That's, yes.
They expect minimal damage? Okay.
May I just follow up on that? I assume there is research out there that will show that solar farms and the like withstand hurricanes just as well as any other provider?
Yes, matter of fact, well,
or better than
experience. Irma came over, right, and OUC already has some farms, and they suffered some minimal damage, but nothing major.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then I know, I don't know if this is, but with our current portfolio, where does the pricing fall in line with our current portfolio?
It's a good question. 40.
Without getting specific, but I mean, is this, because this is peak hour, right? So you want to compare it to peak hour rates and not the off hour rates in the middle
of
the
night? It's not apples to apples.
Right.
However, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jerry, but it's coming in lower than what we're currently, when you look at just energy costs, it's not lower. But when you add everything in, it's a lower cost.
Okay. And then, so on the transmission side, I guess that's part of it also, right? Is that you had this factor in there for Duke of 4.5% increase in price. Was that over the entire 20-year cycle that you only expect them to be able to get?
If
that
I would use their forecast, we'd use 7% for the auto
increase. Okay. Thanks, Jerry.
By the way, on just a little side note, when I was in St. Croix, it kind of amazed me there was a solar field in St. Croix. They rely on solar. And I can tell you that every single power pole was down, every single, and the solar field was intact. It was amazing to me. I was really surprised by that.
That's a testimonial.
It was crazy.
Okay, folks, Commissioner Cooper, did you have another question?
My concern is the length of the agreement with no ability to adjust price downward. And I assume you negotiated that right away in order to ensure you had no up in the price. Is that what happened? Because 20 years is a long time with technology improving the way it's improving.
Yeah, I understand. What NextEra has to do is pay for the investment, and generating assets are very long-term investments. And they weren't willing to go any less than 20 years. They wanted to go 30. We talked them down to 20. With 2 5-year extensions that are at the buyer's sole option now, as he explained, the buyer is actually a committee of members. They originally wanted a lower starting price with escalation over time, and we said no, we want a fixed price for the term. Most of our members wanted a fixed price for the term. So it's kind of a back cast of, if you look at how much it costs to build it, how much revenue do they have to collect over 20 years to pay for what they built and maintain it. So that's where they ended up at the price and why it's fixed for 20 years.
Is there anything in the contract dealing with the 2 5-year options that gives the purchasers the opportunity to negotiate price downward?
No. It's a... So it would still be 4%. So if there's a cheaper alternative out there, we can go get that. But for this contract, it's
so we'd have to have unanimous agreement of the committee to, if the realities have changed at that point, we would have to have unanimous agreement of the committee to try to, you know, get a lower price.
Correct. Yeah. And for clarification, you saw 12 cities up there. That's not the committee. The committee is the other five municipals with you, six communities,
gotcha,
is what we're talking about. So it's not a unanimous consent to 12. Unanimous
so we're on that small committee?
You're on this. You would be on that small committee.
And so the way this works overall is through essentially federal tax credits today. Is that fair?
That's correct.
Right. So I'm fascinated. That's the wrong word. I was very interested in fully understanding this because of the nature of those subsidies and the fact that everyone in the United States is paying those subsidies. However, I was interested in this because it's the first structure of a solar deal that I've seen, that I've read about anywhere, that actually is in the self-interest of the local community electric distributor. So I'm in favor of this.
In fact, I'd like to move it.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second.
Great. Mr. Seidel, you have the floor, sir.
Yeah, no, thank you. I did have a comment as Jerry steps to the mic here.
I want to add one clarification. Commissioner Cooper's concern about the 20 years, big concern of mine. And I want you to know that we looked at 10, 15, and 20 megawatts. The economics were positive at all three sizes. When you get up to 20 megawatts, there were hours in the day that I worried about minimum load issues. And so I scratched the 20 off the list. And I began to lean toward the 15 megawatt deal just because the economics were so strong. But I'm like you, Commissioner Cooper, 20 years a long time. And so my thinking was, let's drop back to 10. Great economic savings under most of the scenarios, but it's only 3.1% of our total overall cost. If we're dreadfully wrong, you know, our customers are not going to be adversely affected.
It's very good.
So I think that's the way you balance it, by going small.
It's very good diversification.
Yes, sir.
Right. Mr.
Environmentally, Seidel. Certainly.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say. That's what Jerry taught me when I first did the portfolio. So it's nice that he refreshed my memory there. But, I mean, one of the things that's nice is it is a guaranteed price. And when we were first doing the portfolio, the prices were all over the map, and we were trying to get longer guaranteed deals so that we could let our customers know that our prices will be stable for this time period. So the fact that it's a portion of this portfolio and it's that long term and it's solar, I think that's I'm very impressed with the deal that's come before.
Thank you. And I also think, you know, at the end of the 20-year deal, everything's up for renegotiation. So that's, you know, if prices before we sign on for 5 years, I'm sure people will be back at the table.
I'm disappointed that all of our solar advocates are not here today.
Well, they don't.
They came to the wrong meeting.
Yeah, that's right.
They're focused on the wrong thing. Let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wish to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. Please step up, sir.
Thank you.
Mike Barrowman, 1010 Green Tree. So I support the program in this way. But I'd ask a question, because I didn't really understand why, if this is only 6% of our needs and there's economy of scale, why are we not doing 15%? That's at a higher risk, but it's a fixed price, as you said, Greg. So to me, there's economy of scale to go even further and challenge ourselves at fixed costs. Things get more expensive. Yes, technology gets cheaper and you keep on buying new things every 2 years, but you're throwing away what you're doing. So to me, I would ask the question about why not bigger scale. So that's question number one. Question number two, so there was talk about if one of the cities can't do it. What happens if the provider goes bust? I'm not suggesting you will, sir. But where are our guarantees that power will be provided if either this provider or the manufacturer or the people making the farm have problems or don't keep up their maintenance? So I'd like to see our guarantees and understand how we make sure we can stay with a fixed price and someone doesn't come back with a change to us in 5, 10, 15 years' time.
A good question.
Thank you. See if there's other comments from the public before we ask the providers to come back. Sir, please.
Good evening. I'm Todd Weaver. I live at 1051 Lake Bell Drive, and all of you that know me know that I'm a proponent of renewable energy. And I had a little wrinkle that I'd like to throw in here. We talked about the potential for one of the cities to default, and I'd like to know if there's maybe an amendment to that contract that says that Winter Park could buy that piece out from this deal, because I think it's a great deal. And just so you know, solar energy right now is the cheapest by far way to generate power, and it makes sense for us to delve into this deeper, and I agree with the last speaker that we should be pushing this forward as we go on, and I commend you all for making this deal happen. And Dan, you too. Thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Weaver. Okay, anyone else? Nope. Frank, would you mind stepping back up? I think there are some questions. I think that the question regarding if there is a default, that capacity is offered to the rest of the members. The other members are...
If the
provider defaulted.
No, the second question. The gentleman that Mr. Weaver stood up and said if there is a default...
There are two default questions.
Right. The default by one of the participating cities, that capacity is then offered to the other participating cities, correct?
Yes.
On a prorated basis. Okay. And then regarding the default of the provider?
The default of provider, we actually worked
spent a lot of time on the contract provisions in regards to that. They will be issuing debt, so if they default, the bank could take over. The bank would assign an operator. We have approval rights of who that operator would be. The contract would not go away. The contract would stay in place. So we did work extensively on those provisions to protect our interests, just in case NextEra goes belly up or the limited liability corporation goes belly up.
Okay. And is there additional capacity if the city did so choose to purchase? To the first question.
If a city defaults,
Right now, currently, could we make it more than 6% of our supply?
You can. OUC has given us a range for their approval. Because of that range for their approval, there's a bit of wiggle room.
Okay.
I would not recommend going as high as some of it have stated. If you go, the problem with solar is it's an intermittent resource. It only generates power when the sun shines. So you have to have conventional fossil fuel generation to back up the solar right now, because batteries are too expensive and don't work well enough.
Okay.
So I wouldn't go too much higher than what was recommended to you.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
And I was supporting what's in here, not
yes,
higher.
Yes, I understand. Commissioner Seidel.
I think when you talk about a phase two, I mean, this will be done in 2020. If you're going to do another one, we would then have opportunity, yes, I think, to buy more at that time.
Sure.
I think it's good to see how
it's
phase
good starter.
One goes. And then I also real quick just wanted to thank the Utility Advisory Board. They were involved in this process as well, and they went through
sure.
and brought this
good.
Before us.
You're here.
Mr. Mayor, may I make a general comment on
this? Absolutely.
The
please, then we'll move this to a vote.
Okay. This is a major change in Florida's solar energy profile. And if this works, there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of very flat, barren acres in the center of Florida that could be a candidate for further solar generation, which, if you look at the economics of household solar versus field solar, the field solar makes much more economic sense in the long term. I think this is fantastic. As much as I disagree with the federal subsidies, I agree with the efforts to make this happen. So I'm excited to approve it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Cindy, we have a motion, we have a second. I see no amendments, so would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. Thank you for the work on this. Mr. Arteman, would you please read 11A? This is on second reading.
Yes, sir. Ordinance number -18, an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, vacating and abandoning a portion of the Lauren Avenue right-of-way from Elvin Avenue to the city limit line dedicated by homeacres according to the plat thereof as recorded in plat book M, page 97 of the public records of Orange County, more particularly described in Exhibit A, providing for conflict, recording, and an effective date.
Wonderful, thank you.
I'd like to move it.
Second.
Okay. We'll open up the floor to public comment. This is on second reading, folks. Anyone that's like to address the commission on item 11A, now is your time. Okay, seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Okay. It's not 5 o'clock yet, but we will. Let's take commission reports, and then we'll have time at the end of the commission reports to take public comment on anything else. Commissioner Seidel, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I did want to follow up. You know, I talked last time about the what happened at the high school, and for people to start using common sense about making some rules regarding guns, not to eliminate guns, but we've got to have some proper gun control legislation. I was very proud of Rick Scott and our state government for passing some rules and getting some rules in place. I found it very interesting that the NRA immediately filed suit against those rules. And do they actually get the people from Florida that are NRA members to vote that they would do that for the state of Florida? And the other interesting part was we had a big discussion about home rule. We want to make our local laws. So the NRA, apparently if you're a member of the NRA, there aren't local laws. There's only laws around the country. The NRA what used to be about safety. And I talked about my experiences with gun safety. And, you know, I would like to hear more of what they do for gun safety. We haven't solved the problems of these shootings yet, okay? And until we do, we all need to work together to solve the problems. So I did want to say I was very impressed with our state government and very impressed with those high school students for the effort that they put forward. And I'm hopeful that we won't have to go through this again because of some of these rules that have passed. So that's all I want to say on that. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Commissioner Sprinkle.
I don't really have anything to add.
Commissioner Cooper.
The street bricking policy that I had talked to you about last week, and I gave you the information showing what our policy said versus the way we operate. And Randy, I don't know if staff had a chance.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Okay, so we will be seeing something back to kind of align what we say with what we do. Good, I like that. The next thing was the Florida League of Cities has a webinar scheduled for March the 28th from 2 to 3. If any of you just want to hear their recap of the legislative session, that's always, they always have some interesting little tidbits to add. And that's probably all I have today. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Mayor Wilden.
I have nothing specific except to wish everyone a wonderful week and a happy Art Festival.
We do have
elections.
The Duck Derby here.
Oh,
yes.
Vote, please vote.
You got 8 minutes to talk about it.
I want to thank the residents. We mentioned this before, but the home rule issue is a big issue. Your voices were heard at the state level, particularly by the Senate, who I think acted very, very mature manner, the way they looked at laws and the way they looked at the bills that were before them. Kurt, thank you. I know there's a lot of people on this dais and elsewhere in the city that took part in communicating and trying to work those, try to make those bills a little bit less onerous. And as close as I am with our elected officials, I will tell you that we do need to remind them that they represent us up there and that they need to vote as we, as voting members, would expect them to. So I was disappointed a little bit, but anyway, that will be communicated effectively to each of them. So let's open up the floor to public comment, and we will hang around until 5 o'clock in case anybody shows up at 5 to speak. But anybody wishing to speak to address the commission on any item that's not on the agenda, now is your time. Mr. Crum.
Thank you. So Michael Perelman, 1010 Green Tree. Tomorrow there's going to be a vote for a new mayor. This is an important role for the city. It will make a big difference who sits there as the mayor with the commission members in terms of the future of this city, where it goes, how it grows. But are we informed as a community about who these people are and what their visions are? Thomas Jefferson said, a well-informed electorate is a prerequisite for democracy. Also, people can only make choice if they have access to information. And the government has a special duty to collect and disseminate that information. So what does Winter Park do as a city in terms of informing us? So we know who nominated the candidates. We know who's given money to their campaigns. We know you paid $30 each for the opportunity to stand as mayor and earn $3,000. Thank you very much, sir. And we know the state of your campaign funds. But from a city information point of view, we know nothing about the candidates. There is no public information on the City of Winter Park website telling us who you are, what you stand for. I'm not talking about your political affiliations. I recognize that's not part of this process. But we know nothing about the candidates in any real way. And I think we should. And I'd like to make a suggestion that the City of Winter Park mandates that every candidate for a public office provide to the city their vision for the city, what they want to do, what they stand for, and the city should post it on the website. Now, I know that the individual candidates have their own website, but surely as the city, we have a responsibility to inform our citizens about the people who are going to lead us and help us understand who they are. So a vote is an informed vote, not just, I like you or I don't like you. It's informed on who you are
and what you're bringing to the city. So I'd ask that the website be expanded a little bit to include information on candidates and what you want to do for the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Anyone else? No, we have some time. So
you are not required for your agenda to wait till 5. I realize we're that close.
We always try to get close.
Right.
We never know. This could be his last 4 minutes.
I will say this. I think you bring up some interesting points, Mr. Perlman. And I think that I think it's the candidate's responsibility to inform the public. I don't believe that any level of government, whether it's county, state, federal, that I'm aware of, provides that information. Am I wrong?
I couldn't answer that question, but we've had the conversation in the past up here about whether we should create a page that, you know,
I will say this, what happens is going to be someone's going to accuse you of being biased in one way or the other.
That's right. So the city would have to stay out of it as far as producing it.
Even posting.
And you have to actually ensure the accuracy of what
you have to verify the accuracy. So that's where I think the city may get itself into jeopardy. I do think it's incumbent upon the candidates, though, to get the word out there. There have in the past been debates that were public debates, and this season they were offered, but some did not partake. I believe me, I feel your pain more than anybody.
Last time too.
Yeah, but that was one debate. That wasn't every debate.
You know, what you could do is you might think about putting access to who is running, making an information sheet so that you stay away from anything.
With just a link.
Just
simple.
A link.
I got to tell you.
That would be, it is a can of worms.
Somebody's going to have an issue.
I know.
But I do take his point. It is particularly frustrating when information is out that's not, that's, you are not have the ability to refute.
I have a different topic we could discuss.
We're a public comment, Mr. Seidel, so I think you've burned your time. Go ahead, sir. What do you got? We will wrap it up.
The item that Beth Hall brought up about the signs when we're rezoning properties and it's multiple properties.
That was a good point.
Is there a policy around that, that we only need to have one sign in those areas?
Yeah, we only need one sign. that one did not make sense to me because that piece of property is all contiguous. It's not as though it's all separate. I mean, to go by that piece of property and see
four
or five different signs.
I don't know what the regulations are. Why don't we ask the professional?
Maybe it's about where on the property.
Who is the professional that oversees that? George, is that you? Is that Dory who oversees?
Well, Troy
that notice. Troy's running,
coming.
Trying to sneak out. Troy, we'll talk sidewalks next.
I do have a question about sidewalks, if you will entertain one more question after this.
Well, for public hearings for the Board of Adjustment, we put a sign on each street frontage, and the sign ordinance addresses having signs on each street frontage. On that situation, there's only one street frontage. Okay. They're contiguous properties. So typically you would put sign. I mean, if it went the entire block, obviously it might be obvious from staff that they should have more than one sign.
I think then that's where you get into the, you know, what is it, two properties, is it 10 properties? When do you put multiple signs?
Or is it a distance, 1,000 feet, which 500 feet?
I don't mind the consideration.
Probably better.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have gotten notice on that, on those issues, on that property, so people are aware of what's going on in that property. But I don't know. If you want to take a peek at it, it would be.
Yeah. I thought it might be just so we know what the policy is.
Okay.
And
maybe center the signs.
Right.
Something simple.
Thanks, George. Okay, folks, we are adjourned. Thank you all.